At Firestone Complete Auto Care, we hold our service to the highest standard. That's why we have thousands of ASE-certified technicians nationally. So don't wait any longer. Give us a call and book your next appointment today.
The wrongs we must right. The fights we must win. The future we must secure together for our nation. This is what's in front of us. This determines what's next for all of us. We are Marines. We were made for this.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
U.S. President Donald Trump said he's not happy with Putin following Thursday's deadly Russian strikes on Kyiv. He took to his own social media site, Truth Social, to say President Vladimir Putin should stop. The comments came just hours before Trump's special envoy, Steve Witkoff, is expected to hold talks with Putin in Moscow today on a potential ceasefire. The Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov spoke to U.S. network CBS about the possibility of a peace deal in the light of the military attacks on Kyiv. Here is what he said when asked by journalist Margaret Brennan why Russia reignited airstrikes on Kyiv just as a ceasefire was hanging in the balance.
We only target military goals or civilian sites used by the military.
So was this an intentional attack then, not a mistake?
If this was a target used by the Ukrainian military, the Ministry of Defense, the commanders in the field have the right to attack them.
I want to ask you about what President Trump said on Wednesday. The President of the United States says he thinks the U.S. and Russia have a deal. Let's get it done. Does President Putin agree?
Well, the President of the United States believes, and I think rightly so, that we are moving in the right direction. The statement by the president mentions a deal, and we are ready to reach a deal, but there are still some specific points, elements of this deal, which need to be fine-tuned, and we are busy with this exact process. And the president of the United States did not spell out the elements of the deal, so it is not appropriate for me to do this.
And that's the veteran Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov talking to journalist Margaret Brennan. Now, this is the man who, the night before the invasion in 2022, said to the world that Russia had no intention of invading Ukraine. The following day, they did. So take nothing that Sergei Lavrov says as gospel. Trump, of course, putting pressure on Ukraine to accept the peace deal that absolutely favors Russia. And it comes after only a few days ago, Trump accused Volodymyr Zelensky of harming peace negotiations. This is some of what he said in the Oval Office.
I just hope he gets this thing solved. It's a vicious war. And if I can help solve it, if it doesn't happen, I will say that I think Russia is ready. And a lot of people said Russia wanted to go for the whole thing. And I think we have a deal with Russia. We have to get a deal with Zelensky. And I hope that Zelensky, I thought it might be easier to deal with Zelensky. So far, it's been harder, but that's okay. It's all right.
Lucky Ukraine. Putin wanted to go for the whole lot, and he only is now going for the bits they're currently occupying, as well as Crimea. Now, for more on this, I'm joined by Professor Emeritus of Peace Studies at Bradford University, Paul Rogers. Paul, good morning.
Good morning. Hello.
Now, I don't believe Lavrov ever. Do you?
It's very difficult to. I mean, as you say, he is an extremely skillful, long-serving and experienced foreign minister, and he plays it as he wants to. Very occasionally, you get indications which are useful, but essentially, I think one has to be very cautious with him, and indeed with so many foreign minister politicians across the world, but especially, I think, Lavrov.
Now, it's very hard to understand the rationale behind Trump's statements. Even telling Putin to stop, he used his first name, Vladimir, stop, almost like a friendly greeting rather than an admonishment.
It is erratic. His whole style is erratic. And I think the thing that people have a difficulty in getting to grips with is this is the way how he does business and presents himself. It's been said, I think, quite widely and rightly, that there are two things which are crucial when you try to understand Trump. One is basically self, hugely self-orientated, and the second is wealth. Basically, wealth and power that goes with it is what's at the root of him. And he is hugely sort of self-aware and self-important. He believes, really, that he is the only key person. You put that together and you have, as I say, a very erratic person. And this makes it very difficult, I think, for ordinary experienced politicians who are used to the interplay across politics to handle. A further point is that Trump and the people around him have brought in so many new people that there's a huge sort of gap in experience of diplomacy. I mean, I don't know how good a negotiator Witkoff is. He's a New York property developer with considerable wealth, but he is not experienced in international affairs at the political level. And the people around him will not be as well, which I think is so important. And I think this is one of the problems that people are seeing in the United States government and the federal government, and that is that as so much of it is culled back, you're losing professional diplomats, professional foreign policy specialists and the rest. This, I think, just makes the whole problem worse. And it does mean that people are, I hate to use the term in this context, constantly shooting from the hip as far as what is going on.
But so seems so apparent to the rest of the world that the U.S. has done a U-turn on Ukraine. It's attributed to Trump's historic annoyance with Zelensky for not helping him to screw Biden. And on the face of it, you say that couldn't be a motivation. Such pettiness could not be the motivation for allowing a country to be destroyed and taken over by a traditional adversary to the United States.
It could be a motive, or at least part of the motive. I think the other thing is that Trump engages with Putin as a further oligarch, as another oligarch. He sees this as crucially important. I think many people in the Western world, particularly people over 45 or 50, who have all the memories of the Cold War tensions, still see Russia as the Soviet Union in the sense of a kind of, almost a sort of the communist bloc. The issue is that it's gone well beyond that. It is now basically a pretty far-right autocracy to an extent with very, very limited democracy. And it is not the same as it was before. In other words, it's the kind of system that essentially Trump can understand. And in his view, do business with. That's the crucial thing. And also, Russia is pretty powerful, nothing like as powerful militarily as we may be led to believe, but certainly it's powerful. It's a strong nuclear weapon state, which is an added problem, I think, in dealing with this. You're dealing with the world's two largest nuclear weapon states, and that is always a danger. And we certainly face that over the possibility of an escalation in Ukraine at some time.
Now, we know that Putin's Russia is a kleptocracy. I mean, Putin is said to be one of the richest people on earth. He's assembled massive wealth. When he'll ever get to spend any of that, who knows? And that must be part of Trump's thinking. You know, he almost envies the power, but also accompanied by unlimited wealth.
The wrongs we must right. The fights we must win. The future we must secure together. For our nation. This is what's in front of us. This determines what's next for all of us. We are Marines. We were made for this.
I think that's absolutely spot on, if I may say so. And I think Trump sees here almost a like-minded spirit, but also, to an extent, a potential rival. But I think it's the seeing the person in almost in your own light and therefore thinking that you understand him and crucially can do business with him. And I think when you put those together, you get a clear indication. The other issue, I think we may have discussed this in the past, is that with this war, it's a war that can only really end at the negotiating table or else in utter disaster for everybody. Because if Ukraine turned the corner and was winning, then the Russians would threaten to escalate. If the Russians really were pushing ahead, then NATO has far too much of its status to lose to allow that to happen. And it would step in some way in the longer term. So it has to end at the negotiating table. And at present, Trump is seeking to do this in a way which is extremely lopsided. But it may be that something along these lines is the way in which at least you get a ceasefire. Once you get a ceasefire, then you can get the professional diplomats and intermediates coming in from the UN and elsewhere and maybe make further progress. But I don't see any other way at the moment.
It's been pointed out to us that the Ukrainian constitution forbids any ceding of Crimea to Russia, never mind the territories that are currently occupied by Russian forces. So the American idea seems to be, look, we unilaterally will recognize Crimea as part of Russia. What the rest of the world does and how Ukraine feels about it is another thing entirely. I mean, is that mechanism possible that the European Union says, we don't recognize Ukraine or Crimea as part of Russia? It is part of Ukraine as far as we're concerned. The United States says, we do.
It is certainly part of a possible solution. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but things can be left in the air. It is certainly the case that all the other territories, or the substantial part of the other four territories, would be sort of put on the back burner, so to speak. There would be a kind of ceasefire at the current lines of control. And beyond that, there might then be negotiations. Now, if you could probably find some sort of way of saying, as far as Crimea is concerned, well, yes, the Americans recognize that the Russians will buy into that, but other people won't. It's not beyond the bounds of possibility. Once you get into any kind of ceasefire, you begin to get the possibility of all kinds of solutions coming up. Mm. And there's a huge amount that can be done when you have professional negotiators trying to feel their way through. It's going to be extremely difficult in this one because of the nature of Trump and his insistence that it's going to be done his way. But it doesn't mean that you can't make some sort of progress. And mediators have had tougher nuts than this to crack in other parts of the world in the past. But the main thing really is to try and get the beginnings of a ceasefire. One other thing, very quickly, there are very strong indications that, in fact, the war is costing Russia hugely, more than is sort of coming into the open. It may be cynical, but I tend to think that, you know, the Western arms companies are very keen to say this war is going to go on and on forever. That's not too clear. And one has to remember that Russia is hugely dependent now on arms from the likes of North Korea and even Iran. It can't do it all itself. So I'm afraid it's a more complicated position than we think. But it may mean that some within the Russian system, maybe quite close to Putin himself, know that it would actually be useful for them to do a deal at this stage.
Now, one of the alarming things, I suppose, we heard from a reporter in Kyiv yesterday, a reporter for French media, saying that if you examine the armaments that are being used by the Russians, that many of them are actually Western-developed arms.
Well, this is true. And, I mean, the point is that things are so fluid normally. You have that the whole international arms trade is a law unto itself. In other words, it's unruly. And all sorts of things can seep through. All the sort of grey area exchanges that you get. And also, probably of all the world's major trading sort of areas, this is probably the most corrupt. There's very little doubt about that. That arms trading is very corrupt, and all kinds of things can end up where they shouldn't be. And control over the way in which arms are spread, even when they've been sold apparently legitimately, are frankly often lacking. So I'm afraid that does ring true very largely.
Now, one of the things that Sergei Lavrov said in the interview with CBS was that if they target civilians, the leaders in the field, it's because the Ukrainian military are using those facilities, you know, an apartment block in the middle of Kyiv, who knows. But it echoes Netanyahu and the behavior of the IDF in Gaza.
Yes, it does. I mean, the IDF basically, you know, any kind of attack, this is because there's a Hamas present. Well, the reality is that Hamas probably has strong minority support across much of the Gaza Strip. It's not total. There'd be opposition to it, even on the streets recently. But essentially, you can always say, you know, pick maybe sort of 8 or 10 men from Gaza, you will find 2 or 3 of them at least will support Hamas. That makes it very easy for the IDF to say, you know, anywhere we hit is relevant. And I think the problem is, I mean, it's a huge subject to discuss, but whatever else there is, you're seeing that Israel is losing more and more international status as the days go by. And, of course, the cost to the Palestinians are unbelievable.
The question of a ceasefire in Ukraine then, Paul, I mean, Russia broke whatever agreement they had a month ago, promising not to target the energy infrastructure, civilian infrastructure, and then did precisely that.
Yes, absolutely. And this
so
is one
can
of
you ever trust them? Ever trust
well,
them?
Well, the only possibility... Well, there have been two issues here that may make a difference. One is this suspicion that, in fact, Russia is finding the costs are getting worse and worse. And two, it is possible that if they really do just behave in that way, that may push Trump to some point to say, look, we have got to stop this and to come out with sort of open threats. One feels, I have no evidence for this, but I rather suspect the sheer size of those raids on Kyiv and elsewhere last night are almost a kind of in-your-face thing from Russia to Trump. Basically saying, you know, you may be talking about peace. This is what we can also do. Mm. And that could backfire. This is the issue with such an unpredictable world leader as Trump.
Now, the question we've talked about before, Trump's motivation in all of this, whether it's anger at Zelensky, which would be so petty, or whether or not he truly is wittingly or unwittingly a Russian asset.
Oh, yes. There are all sorts of rumors. I mean, the blogosphere on this one is massive. And we simply don't know the answer. All we can say is that Trump has a lot of time for Putin. There could be some sort of hold. I would never rule it out. But it does seem to me that at the very least, he sees to some extent a like-minded spirit. And that is pretty ominous in its own right. But essentially, I think that may be what is more significant at the present time. He sees Putin as somebody of his kind. He recognizes the same sort of power. I suspect that Putin is very much brighter than Trump, incidentally.
Well, we've always said about him, he plays chess while the Americans play checkers. That's what he
yes,
said.
Yes.
I suppose walk like a duck, quack like a duck, you're probably a duck. And that's what I suppose the Western European view of Trump is, that he is Putin's poodle, effectively.
They certainly see that. I mean, I think that's the common view across much of Europe. And of course, they're having to come to terms with that and the many other things as far as Trump is concerned. And you look at the state of affairs within the United States, and it's pretty dire in many different ways, including the possibility of major problems in the months ahead on the economic side. We're in very uncertain times, both in terms of the nature of Trump and what he stands for, and the nature of the impact that he's having within the United States and possibly on the wider international economy. I mean, I'm getting on a bit in life, but I can't remember another time of this kind of danger, except possibly around the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Paul Rogers, Professor Emeritus of Peace Studies at Bradford University, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.